All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are back live at the Sports Medicine Update, interviewing Dr. David Crumbie. He was talking about ACLs, past, present, and future. So you kind of went through a timeline of the ACLs, and you showed some really old stuff. And then you said the first ACL repair was in 1903. So that's the first recorded ACL repair?
Well, ACL management actually goes back all the way to the Egyptian time. So it was very interesting to kind of see kind of how, you know, ortho sports medicine docs at that point were managing this kind of injury. You know, I think the first thing was actually identifying what it was injured. You know, no MRI, no x-ray at the time, that type of thing. So, you know, and even into the late 1800s, where you had, you know, physical exam, you know, advancements like Lachman tests and all those kind of things, you know, or tests like that were developed to kind of identify what guys actually had. You know, you weren't getting ACL from playing football at that point. You were getting ACL from jumping from, you know, from somebody chasing you, trying to hurt you, you know, kind of thing, or food, chasing after food. So, so it was interesting to kind of see the advancement, whether it be, you know, non-surgical or surgical management. But certainly as the early, as you allude to, the early 1900s started looking at surgical approaches to address the issue of how many people ultimately failed. What I didn't include in the talk was, just from a time standpoint, was all the different contraptions that, you know, you were seeing, you know, if you had an ACL injury, this is what you had to walk in, kind of thing. So it was interesting to kind of see how people thought about that kind of injury, and then moving forward, and then had to, you know, what's the anatomy around it, what actually it is, what it does, and figure out how to maneuver other anatomic structures to kind of be the ACL for you. So it was interesting to kind of see that kind of thought process.
Yeah, and so I know that you said in 1917 they used silk to repair the ACL.
Yeah.
What did they use in the 1903 one, did it say?
Well, the first part was just a primary repair. So they went in, opened, you know, big incisions, that type of thing, tried to put some sort of, at that point it was cat gut. I'm not sure exactly what that material was, but they used that and just tied it into the covering of the bone or periosteum. The success of those repairs, albeit at the time, was reported 6 years, you know, perfectly strong, doing great. It probably was doing strong from the immobilization. I mean, you put a good knee in a cast for, you know, 2 months, it's going to be stiff as can be. That probably was more the success versus the repair. Certainly as it became a little bit more popular, people didn't do quite as well, particularly if they were trying to get back into dynamic type activities. So that kind of progressed to using maybe stronger tissue versus repair. So reconstructions became into vogue. And then the general principle, and there's about 40 or 50 different modifications to all these kind of early over-the-top non-anatomic reconstructions. The principle is basically you take medial lateral structures, you got to cross the midline of the knee so that the tibia doesn't translate anteriorly. You know, so it's either taking the medial structures medially, such as the pes group, the hamstring group, you know, leaving them attached either proximally or distally. There's dynamic ones where you take the distal attachment, you thread through the posterior aspect of the knee and tie it over the lateral capsule of the tibia. There's ones where you take the proximal muscle tendons junction, like similar to what we do now, leave the distal attachment to the medial aspect of the tibia, thread it through, whether it be extra-articular or inter-articular, lead to the medial aspect of the femur again in a way to stop the anterior translation of the tibia and fascia lata that was used laterally. So I didn't get into all that. I kind of gave representations of those kind of eras, of those generations of ACL surgery, but it was interesting to kind of see the creativity to try to address this issue. You know, the soft tissue, not to say in closing, the soft tissue reconstructions, you know, also were fraught with problems. You know, not only, you know, stiffness to the degree where you couldn't have a great amount of function from the prolonged immobilization still, but also, you know, problems with decreasing range of motion and that type of thing, because part of the prevention was blocking range of motion. So that had its time, and then the advancement of our human activity as well produce an area where that wasn't good enough either. So every time, every generation of surgeon has had to address the functionality of the patient population. As you got into more advanced, more higher demand activities, as we know now, football, soccer, and all these other things in the 1900s moving forward, the surgery also had to progress and get good enough.
So every time you fix something, we create a new problem by
exactly
using that and getting.
Imagine what we're going to have in the future where we have intraspace travel that's for everybody and those type things. I'm sure you'll get some sort of knee injury, ACL injury maybe, and we'll have to step our game up again to address those issues as well.
Yeah. All right. You talked about all the different types, patellar tendon, the hamstring, the allograft, and changing the placement tunnels, and that was one of the things that's in the last several years shifted as you looked at the re-injury rate. And in the future, you said we're looking at pushing the timelines back. And
right.
I have three ACLs this year that were multi-structural. So, you know, like there was the MCL, the ACL, the meniscus, and two of those actually required them to go back in and have the debridement or the MUA, the manipulation under anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
And in my previous years, I never had experience with that. Can you talk about, is that something that's more common? Like, is that more common now, it's a better practice now, or just discuss why am I seeing that now and I haven't before?
A lot of factors go into it, you know, not just the severity of the injury, the timing of it, what was the status of the surrounding envelope of the knee. You know, I tell my patients, particularly the ones I know have a bad meniscus tear, I'm probably going to have to make more incisions to do an inside-out meniscus repair. The more incisions, the more problems we're going to have with stiffness. So certainly a part of it is severity of the injury, the type of surgery, early mobilization versus, you know, protecting them, you know, from in a delayed fashion. So all those things have a play into the factors of how patients do. Certainly you got a better chance at doing better with less severe injury versus multi-leg, you know, type issues and that type of thing, as well as the condition of the surrounding soft tissue envelope. You know, sometimes they're so inflamed from the early response of the body to the injury itself that it just precludes you from being able to do anything more than just keep them in a brace and let them cool down for a week or two. So a lot of factors go into that. It's not one answer on, you know, for the question on the test, so to speak. But certainly that's a challenge to all of us from, you know, every aspect of the patient injury, you know, 360 approach. You know, you being on the front line, so to speak, it's we all going to have, we have to identify that type of injury and address it in a way that hopefully can produce a knee that's stable with good range of motion.
All right. And so in doing your research, what was the thing that you felt like was the most eye-opening? You're like, there's no way this is real.
You know, some of this stuff is very hard to find, you know. And so when you did find a resource, you know, I was blown away by the plethora of attempts at addressing the injury. Like, you know, hey, you know, you know, this whole conference is given to, you know, what we do now in regards to graft selection. What's the best graft, you know, da, da, da. And guys that tend to do, you know, a fair amount of these, you know, most surgeons probably do this, you know, one every other month, you know, less than 10 in a year for sure. You know, I'm blessed to be able to do these several times a week, even sometimes most weeks. When that being said, I don't have one approach, you know, I'll, as you know, I'll do this for this, you know, kid, da, 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 what we have here. So then, so I think that that in itself was really surprising to see just how creative folks got, you know, at addressing the issues, and then seeing kind of what the each problem or each surgery and the problem that it may have created for most people and how that it needed to be advanced, you know. So I still think we're in that motion now, in that spirit now. I know that I've changed the way I do the surgery, you know, from over the, you know, 10 plus year career I've had, where I'm moving my tunnels, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, all in the spirit of trying to get, you know, a better outcome for my patients.
All right. And if you were predicting the future, what would you say, or what would you guess is going to be the next thing that we're doing with ACLs?
You know, I almost didn't put that slide up there, the Back to the Future reference. I mean, it really, I almost put the future is now, you know. You know, I think that, you know, this is a really, really, you know, good time, you know, to be, you know, as a in the forefront of ACL surgery. I think, you know, we've moved from focusing, and not so much that we don't do it, but certainly the new thing was prevention, right? In the early 2000s to, you know, maybe even 5 years ago. I think now we're looking at adjuncts, whether that be the biologics, like we pointed out, the stem cell type of blood product from bone-based bone marrow versus PRP and that type of thing, where we're using it in sponges or some other delivery system to use the body's natural healing response to kind of address some of these injury complexes. So I think that's definitely here to stay, as well as the synthetics. I think the internal bracing, as we've heard, is becoming more and more popular. I have patients asking me about it. You know, again, I'm not ready to make that leap yet, but certainly some of the preliminary results in the literature, and we're getting more and more studies each month coming out with, at least in the short term, that this is definitely a valid option. I'm not quite sure if it's a bullet in the, you know, armamentarium, so to speak, or, you know, another, you know, button to push, so to speak, to address injury, this type of injury, but certainly that's here. That's a reality. I think we're going to see more and more of that to some degree moving forward. I'm a little more skeptic over the repair scenario. I think it may be a good option in the right patient, but certainly it's worth getting some excitement over. But we've been here before a little bit. So sometimes you see an ACL injury, you know, surgery to address ACL injury where the, you know, we do go back to the future, so to speak. And we found now that we're looking more back at repair when we found what we thought, hey, we did that, done that, we moved on.
We'll see. There was a question from the audience about the internal bracing, and then and the doctor saying, here, I'm going to do this internal bracing surgery, and that you, that the doctor also said, you're probably going to end up tearing it anyways. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, as a surgeon, I mean, I know it wasn't you, and you don't have all the details of the situation, but can you just explain that a little bit more?
No, that's a hard one. So, you know, and again, you got new advances or some new product or something new comes out every month, you know. I think you just have to be, you know, pretty vigilant about kind of why you would use something different and why you do stuff. And, you know, for me, definitely I'm always thinking about the why. And if there's a problem on the why, I want to figure that why out. And there's a product that can fit the why for me that makes sense. Then I think it's worth trying. Right at this moment for me, internal bracing doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And not suggesting that the folks that do it are wrong. It's just that I would like to see how it performs a little bit further out. But certainly I definitely agree that the early data that we have suggests that this is going to be definitely a great adjunct to get patients back even faster. I think that we're still not quite there yet, as far as making it commonplace or the gold standard, so to speak. But certainly we're moving in that direction. I think every day we get closer to, you know, addressing injury that way. And, so it's an exciting time.
But then we again create another problem by
potentially
the same kid,
absolutely,
ACL again, because they rush back too fast.
My first ACL, was one of the repairs, one of the Gore-Tex products. You know, and I definitely remember having pain for a long time after my surgeon told me, hey, you can go back and play and that type of thing. And as, you know, a 17-year-old high school male, I that's all I cared about, you know, was when I was going to get back, you know. And, you know, I had three other ACL injuries to the same knee. And now I got an allograft now. So, you know, some of the research for the talk, you know, hit close to home. You know, yeah. So I can definitely highlight that in regards to kind of that. But I was able to get over it, because I was thought to have a partial tear at the time, that was right at the earlier stages of MRI. And MRI, all MRIs aren't created equal. So those early MRIs are not the ones we have now. And we were in the infancy of that kind of advancement as well. So, you know, I think that, you know, overall it's an exciting time, but I agree that it was kind of at this point in 2018 to hear that it's kind of, maybe we should thought about doing something that we didn't need to do the surgery twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on ACL future past or present?
Again, this is an exciting time. I think it's all going to benefit athletes and getting back to, again, not just a time in a timely fashion, but also being really productive the first day they step on the field again.
All right. Somebody wants to get a hold of you. What's the best way to do that?
You can definitely Google me. They'll show you. You know, I'm on various sites, including the UT Ortho site, as well as Memorial Hermann site in the southeast and Pearland region of town. Of course, all the numbers and stuff are on the internet as well. And certainly, get in touch with me. We try to get to folks 24 to 48 hours. Pretty much if we can. So we're always open.
There you go. Dr. David Crumby at the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. This will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Crumby, which is CRUMBIE 2018. So this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Crumby 2018 for this little interview. And I should have the website for this interview up, or the contact information for Dr. Crumby up on the website there, so you can check that out. Dr. David Crumby, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to know you.
Always, Jay. Yo.